Okay, good morning. Rabbi, when we started this year, there were 10 people at the Minyan every day. I'm just saying. So, at least, yeah, it's almost day. I gave one of my first shiurim I ever gave, there were 35 people at Mincha. This is back in New York. There were 35 people at Mincha. And as Mincha ended, it was a Shal Shuddish year between Mincha, Marav, and Shabbos. As Mincha ended, 34 out of the 35 people walked out of the room. 34 out of 35. And one person stayed. But as he stayed, it was because of this. He was the last person out the door. And as he saw 34 people walk out, he said, "Oh no, this is not good." He sat down and he stayed, and whatever. Well, next week he didn't come back, actually. But we had other people next week, so it's okay. This shiur this morning is sponsored, Baruch Hashem, by Ezra Stern. Le'ili Nishmas Esther Sasha Bas Chaim Zev. Ezra's a close friend of mine, even closer with the Talmud of Rabbi Pear. And we appreciate his contribution, his sponsorship, his support of the program. And we hope that our Divrei Torah will taka be an Ili Neshama for Esther Sasha Bas Chaim Zev. So we are reading this Shabbos, Mir Hashem, Parshas Ha'azinu. Parshas Ha'azinu is an interesting parsha full of shira, full of poetry, words that are very difficult to break our teeth on, words that Michael probably appreciates because they're difficult to break our teeth on. So if you read Parshas Ha'azinu, you'll come up with a lot of Divrei Torah that are somewhat esoteric. Even Rashi has to struggle to explain just what the words mean. But let's start with something simple, not in a pasuk, but rather in Rashi. The first pasuk says, Ha'azinu Hashamayim va'adaber v'seshma ha'aretz emrefi. Ha'azinu Hashamayim, the heavens should hear, the sky should hear my words. Ha'azinu Hashamayim va'adaber, and I will speak. V'seshma ha'aretz emrefi, and the land should hear my words, should hear the words that come out of my mouth. What is this talking about, the land and the sky? So Rashi quotes very famously, Shekach amarti lahem, says the Kaddish Baruch Hu, that I am saying, I've said, or through Moshe Rabbeinu, I've said, to the sky and to the earth, she'atem tiyu edim, you will be the witnesses, you will be the edim to my bracha to Klal Yisrael, to my curses to Klal Yisrael, meaning the very fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises Maftiach that He'll reward us for what we do good, the schar, and He'll punish us for that which we do bad, the onesh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses the Shemayim and the Aretz as the edim, as the witnesses to testify to that fact. What is the significance of the sky and the land acting as edim? So Rashi says a very cryptic line, if they get a schar, so they'll get paid back by the Shemayim. We're going to get, we know from the Parsha in Kriyas Shema, we're going to get the matar and the geshamim. The sky is going to produce rain, and that will help us make produce on the earth. So we know the sky and the earth will reward us for our good deeds. What about our bad deeds? How is the sky and the earth functioning as an aid, as a testifying witness to our bad deeds? So he says, v'im yischaivu, says Rashi, v'im yischaivu, tiyeh bahem yad ha'edim tchila. We know the psukim tell us that when it comes to literal aidus, when you have edim on a maisavir that leads to a skill or something, so the psukim tell us, v'yad ha'edim tiyeh bahem tchila, that the edim, the ones who were the witnesses to the crime, they're the ones who should start, they should throw the first rock. They should be the ones involved in the process. I once heard a not so nice joke that a father-in-law said at his son-in-law's afraf, that im yisakel im hashor sakel yisakel, that if the shore has to be killed, so yada edim tiyeh bo barishona, the witnesses are the first ones to stone him. So he said that his son-in-law and a lot of chassanim read the pasuk im hashver sakel yisakel, if the father-in-law is going to be killed, yada edim. Yeah, but Rishona, the son-in-law is going to be the first one. So not so nice. But he's Baruch Hashem, he's doing well. But anyway, so we know the Edom are supposed to be the first ones to take the retribution, to take that first rock and throw it at the person who committed the crime. Says Rashi, that's what it means over here, that the atzar shemayim lo yeh matar b'yad demalis kena sivula v'achakach v'avad demehir al yedei ha'umos. This is how the punishment is going to be from the sky and from the land through our punishments. What's Rashi hinting at? Meaning, the fact that they're the Edim, how does that link up with the punishment? What does that have to do with the fact that the Edim are the first ones to stone? So look at this Sfas Emes here in number one, the second paragraph you have in Shnas Tafresh Lamed Dalet, which again will be 1873, because it won't yet have been January that year. So Rashi says that it's the Ada Edim Tiyah Barishon, and that's what the Pasuk is telling us. Says the Sfas Emes, Kimimei Lokein, it's automatic, or as we say in the yeshivas, ipso facto, eo ipso. Kimimela Kane. That's automatically how it's going to happen. Shekoach Shemayim Va'aretz Tluyin Ba'avodas Hashem. The Ba'avodas Bnei Yisrael, sorry. The very strength and power and all of the impact that the sky and the land have on this world is dependent on the actions of Klal Yisrael. Meaning, the way we act down here
is the very way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will respond through his sky and through his aretz. That is dependent upon our act down here. So the punishment, says the Sfas Emes, we'll get into this a little bit more soon, the punishment is not that if you do bad, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will now make some reverse of nature, that the skies will not yield rain and the land will not yield fruit. No. If you don't act properly, automatically, mimela, the sky will stop raining. Automatically, mimela, we won't be able to plow the earth and get good fruit. Why not? Because the land and the sky are built by nature to be in tandem with. They're dependent on our actions, the actions of Klal Yisrael, the Avodas Hashem of us, down here. Says the Sfas Emes beautifully, look at the bold here at the end of the paragraph. Upashat atam yada edim v'rishona. What's the pshat in this whole idea that the Edim, the witnesses, are the ones who are supposed to be the first ones to stone the guy who's committed the crime? Why? Why are the ones who are the Edim supposed to be the ones to be the first ones to punish him? Says the Sfas Emes, because Shekein Tzarech Lios, that's the way it's supposed to be. Listen to this. Shelo yuchal adam liros davar avera. A person cannot stand to see a maisa avera be done in this world. A person cannot witness a crime, an affront to Kvod Shemayim. He cannot witness that and see that and be an aid on that avera. V'lachein ha'edim sherot tzrichim l'soklo. If a witness sees an avera, what's his natural reaction? We gotta kill this guy. We gotta stone this guy. We gotta knock him down. Are you crazy? Violate Shabbos? Kill someone? Commit theft? We see a crime with our own eyes and we don't respond? Says the Sfas Emes, Yada Edim Tiyeh Babi Rishona, means that when the Edim see a crime, the natural reaction is disgust, contempt, and an immediate hope that this person should not exist anymore, this person should be punished for his crime. Sfas Emes explains, that's the connection between our psukim and the Edus that Rashi was referring to. Hazinu Hashemayim v'adavera. V'sishma aretz imrithi. Says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, you, land and sky, you're my witnesses. You're the Edim. Why? Because when you see something happen down here, it's not that you then think, well, how should we respond? What should we do? Should I hold back rain? Should I give rain? The natural reaction, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu built the Bria, the natural order of the world, is that the world, the physical world, responds to the spiritual actions of us down here. Just like Edim. Just like when a witness sees someone who committed a crime, they naturally burst out in anger and react by having to punish them. So too, Shamayim Va'aretz reacts so naturally, and the Bria is built that way. And this speaks to a Yesod, which I heard developed multiple times by my Rebbe Rav Twersky Shlita, and we'll weave some of it into something from Rav Soloveitchik that he quoted, but it's not in writing, but I put something else from writing here. Rav Twersky pointed out that if you look in the Psukim, sorry, Rav Twersky quoted that Rav Soloveitchik, his grandfather, pointed out, it's just not in writing anywhere, you can't find this, but he said he heard it from him, in the Psukim in Eov, so Eov struggles so much to try to understand why do good things happen to bad people, why do bad things happen to good people, why punishment, why sadness in this world, why all the tragedy, and how is it dulled out to the different residents of our world. So Eov struggled with that. In HaKadosh Baruch Hu's second speech to Eov, so he goes on a rant, about the Maisa Bereshis. If you look in Eov, Parak Lamed Ches 38, look at the first pasuk. Vayan Hashem es Eov min asara vayomar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered from within a storm, out of the whirlwind, and he said to Eov as follows, Mize machshech etza b'milim blidas. Who's this person who's trying to give advice? I'm not someone who's trying to be a consultant on the way I should run the world without knowing anything. Do you really know anything? Efo ayisab yasti aretz. Where were you at Maisa Bereshis? Where were you when I created the world? Then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, were you there when I created the sun and the sky and the land and the ocean? And he says, where were you when I created all this physical, natural order in this world? So first of all, what is the response? Eov is asking, why do bad people get good things? Why do good people get punished when they seemingly don't deserve it? And Hashem answers, were you there when I made mountains and grass and birds? Well, what's the relation between the natural Bria, the physical creation, and punishment? And then if you really think there's a connection, well, it's just strange it gets thrown in the middle randomly. If you look in Pasuk Yud Gimel and then again in Tezvav, just two half psukim separately in the middle of this discussion of Maisa Bereshis, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lechos Bekantos Ha'aretz, the Shachar, the dawn, the sunrise, is supposed to spread across the world, V'inaru Rishayim Mimena, and it destroys the bad people. The sun, the very sun that lights up the world, destroys the Rishayim. V'imanam Rishayim Oram, and the sun won't benefit the Rishayim. What does that do? Are you talking about the Bria? Are you talking about punishment? Like, what's this speech about? So Rav Soloveitchik explained that that's exactly the yesod that we saw before. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't create a bria, which functions naturally and independently, and just goes on and on and on. And then when we do bad things, he punishes us. He steps in. He reverses the order. No. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world which is a moral world. It's an ethical world. And if a person responds to that ethical world and fulfills Ratzon Hashem, then the Ratzon Hashem of the world will be that it will naturally fulfill its tachlis of being good for that person. But the world was created to benefit the person who's doing good, and the world was created to do the opposite to someone who's doing the opposite. It's a natural order that the whole cosmic system is a natural order which was built not to respond, but to go dependent hand in hand with our actions down here. If you look in the sources that I quoted to you from the book Worship of the Heart and the book Emergence of Ethical Man, which are basically primary sources, they're classes the Rav gave, and he didn't write these books, so to speak, but they're taken from his notes, from his manuscripts. So this is as good as primary sources. That's what I have from my Rebbeim. So he has here this yesod spelled out very beautifully, this principle, that the idea is that the world is not something with functions automatically, separately from the way we are, but it's a living, purposive creature. It's expressive of the divine will, which is embedded in it, and it's embedded in its organic and inorganic nature. When the world sees, so to speak, what's going on, it responds naturally. It reacts naturally. It's not something separate, but it's something that's built into the Bria. The Bria is programmed so that when I act in a certain way, the world responds in kind, which explains, you know, a very old minhag in Los Angeles, which I only started to learn about a couple weeks ago, which is that when a New Yorker comes, so they expect it to be 68 and sunny, right? So first of all, what does that say about Los Angeles? It must be one of the more moral, upstanding states in the country, I assume. It's always nice weather that the world responds. But what do Angelenos say to a New Yorker when he comes and it's not 68 and sunny, but it's 85 and humid, or he comes and it's raining? What do they say? Yeah, they sometimes say that. That's true.
Sorry.
I'm so sorry. They apologize. And you know, I was wondering last couple, what are you guys apologizing for? Like, it's not your fault. You know what I realize now?
It is your fault.
Every time the weather changes, every time the world responds, it's responding to something. It's acting inherently in tandem with our actions down here. If the weather is bad, we have to start doing a little introspection, start thinking, hey, why did the weather change? Which also begs the question.
The weather's always going
after us. Yeah, I hear that. It also begs the question, by the way, which is that I came, 3 months ago already? And the month in the middle, that 1 month, was like the worst weather you guys have had in 20 years. So I wonder what I brought with me to impact your weather. But either way, that's what you see, the yesod over here. It's not exactly the same, but it reminds me also of what the Nefesh HaChaim says, which is that the Gemara tells us that if a person has averos, if a person has yesurin, he has to mefashvesh b'maisav, he has to look around to see what he's done wrong with, as the Gemara tells us. And the Nefesh HaChaim spells out within that Gemara something the Gemara goes into a little bit of detail, the Nefesh HaChaim just fleshes out a little more, which is that a person should actually note what the yesurin are. If a person's hand is bothering him, he should think, what have I done with my hand that can make it hurt right now? If a person's head is bothering him, he should think, how did I use my head improperly? What aver did I do with my mind that now I have a headache? And again, if a person can't think of what he did wrong, so then the Gemara says, Yidla bevitl Torah, everyone can get caught for Vitl Torah. We all have an issue with Vitl Torah. But certainly we should look each aver and aver, what the pain is, would probably correspond to some aver. What does that mean? Is HaKadosh Baruch Hu like tit for tat like that? The answer is yes, but not really. It's even deeper than that. If you use your hand the wrong way, why would your hand feel good? Why would it work? The whole point of the Bria, the whole point of the natural order of the world, is an ethical, moral creation which functions based on our actions. So if we use our hands for good, if we use our minds for good, then those Avarim will function properly. And if we don't, you better look and see what you did wrong with that Avar, because that's probably a direct corresponding reaction to what you've done with that body part. That's such an important lesson to learn all the time. It's important, by the way, Sukkot time. Sukkot time, we go out into nature, we take plants, and we praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We use all of Maisa Bereishis to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to give Simcha. And we sit in a sukkah, we sit outside, B'tzela Dehamnusa, with the branches on top of us, and the skunks and California cockroaches around us. And we thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we show Simcha to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How? Through nature. through blending our Avodat Hashem with nature. We're supposed to focus on that all year, but at least, Chach, during this couple of days of Sukkot, we should look around us and think how all of this, Maisa Bereishis, the plants and the trees and the sky, is all talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaShemayim, Misapim, Kvod Kel, but also is responsive to our actions towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this natural way. If you flip the page to page number 2, and it's source number 2 in the Sfas Emes, so the Sfas Emes notes this is not really from Parshas Ha'azinu, although it appears in his pieces on Ha'azinu. He quotes the Tur, who quotes the Medrash, that these, you know, 4 or 5 days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot are all days in which we're basically scot-free from Avonos. That's why the Yom Rishon, the Yom HaRishon of Sukkot, is referred to as the Rishon LaAvonos. It's the first day where we start doing Averus again. So the Tur quotes this, Ben Yom Kippur and Sukkot, we're so involved in Lula, Sukkah, that we don't even do any Averus. We're too busy. It's too hard to do Averus. We're too busy. We don't have time to do Averus. That's what the Medrash says. So the Taz, Eskakasha, the Taz says, how could it be? How could it be that the days leading up to Sukkot, where we're buying a lulav, where we're building a sukkah, we're buying our esrog, we're getting ready, we're cooking our yantif meals, we're involved in the preparation for mitzvahs, there we don't do averos. And then what happens on Sukkot? What do we do on Sukkot? We do those mitzvahs, and what happens? We start doing averos? How could that be? The hachan, the preparation, is bigger, is more holy, is more, I don't know, protective than the mitzvah itself? Is that really possible, says the Sfas Emes? Yeah, absolutely. This is a theme you find all across the Sfas Emes, and his grandfather, and his children. You find this in all of the Sfarim from Ger and above. You'll find this Yesod, if you look in the bold in the third line, Aval Eina Davar Rachok Sheyoser Ka Chatzala Yesh Ba'achanas HaMitzvah Miguf Kiyum HaMitzvah. It's not hard to believe. Yeah, preparatory acts towards a mitzvah, preparing for a mitzvah, Hachana LeMitzvah, can be greater and can be a greater shmir, a protection against Avera, even than the mitzvah itself. And he gives us three explanations as to how. Very, very beautiful and meaningful. Echad, Ki Asiyos HaMitzvah Hu Rak L'Shah V'Hachana Hu L'Olam. Now, he might mean something more esoteric here, but on a very basic level, what does this mean? How long do you take a lulav for? Let's say you're like Anshei Yerushalayim. Let's say you hold a lulav all day. And let's say you're even though you're outside of Yerushalayim, you hold like Anshei Yerushalayim, that the mitzvah is, we'll give it a d'oraisa, we'll give it for all the days of Sukkot. So what, a couple of days, minus a Shabbos, right? A couple of days you hold a lulav. We're not really holding it all day, so a couple of hours throughout Sukkot. Okay, so maybe during those times it's a very strong moment. How many times do you sit in the sukkah? So if you're really good, you eat and you sleep in the sukkah, maybe you leave for davening or to use the restroom, but you basically are in the sukkah for a long time. Okay, let's give you 7 days, maybe 6 with some subtracted time. That's good. How long can you prepare for mitzvos? How long is the hachana for mitzvos? Says the Zazem, eternal. What do you mean eternal? Meaning I could start preparing for the mitzvah, if I wanted, I could start preparing the mitzvah of Pesach now. I could start preparing for the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah at this point. I mean, I'm not going to. That's kind of, Chazal gives us the 30 days. But the point is that even at 30 days versus one day, you can understand, the hachana for a mitzvah just takes up so much more time, or potentially can take up more time. If we were focused on the fact that we always have mitzvahs coming up, we'd always be in a preparatory stage for mitzvahs. Hachana le-mitzvah is something which lasts a lot longer than the mitzvah itself. So just on a practical level, a person can be osik in hachanas ha-mitzvos for an even longer time than the mitzvah itself. The Ode says, Sfas Emes, ki mi yuchal l'kayim mitzvah ki mishpata. This reminds me of what the Chovas Levava says in Shar Bitachon. He says, you know what you have to have bitachon for? A lot of things. One of the things you have to have bitachon for is that when you prepare to do a mitzvah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you the strength and the ability and the lifespan to complete that mitzvah. How many people do we know that prepared and prepared and prepared and something happened and they weren't able to do the mitzvah? In the most extreme cases, Rahman al-Tzan, people don't make it to, we say a Shechianu every single year on mitzvahs for a reason. Kadosh Baruch Hu has to let us make it to the whole year to the next mitzvah. Sometimes a person gets ready for lulav and Rahman al-Tzan, he breaks his arm while he's building a sukkah and he can't lift a lulav over sukkahs. I don't know, a person has to daven. This, the Chovas Levavos says, a person has to hope to a Kadosh Baruch Hu and daven be miyachel, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu will give him the strength, the ability, and the lifespan to actually complete the mitzvahs. Hachana le-mitzvah we can always do. But miyuchal, who knows? Who knows? Miyuchal liftoach, that they can be mekayim the mitzvah themselves. Hachana you can do, but that you can actually fulfill it, that's up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. V'yesh ladin kal v'chomer, says the Sfas Emes, the last reason, mimasha kasev zal, here the Chazal said, hirhurei avera kashim me'avera. They said that hirhurei avera is kashim me'avera. What does it mean, hirhurei avera kashim me'avera? When a person does an avera, that's really bad. When a person has hirhurim about an avera, that's even worse. Even worse, that's what Chazal tells. Now, that's a very cryptic line. Why is it true that thinking about an Avera is worse than the Avera itself? Seems counterintuitive, right? So the Nefesh HaChaim has a very, very meaningful, beautiful explanation. Nefesh HaChaim says in Shar Aleph, in the beginning, he gives you a whole bunch of ways in which the human body and the human psyche are comparable and actually built in a comparable way on purpose to the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan. And he basically boils it down to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the most holy, holy physical place in the entire world. The Kodesh HaKadoshim, Sanctum Sanctorum. is the heart, is the lev, is the mind, the intellect, but it's basically, you know, the psyche of the human being. Meaning our Kodesh Kadashim, if our body is the Beis HaMikdash, is the Mishkan, our Kodesh Kadashim lies in our heart and our lev. Says the Nefesh HaChaim, that's why it's so much worse to think about an Avera than it even is to do it. When you do an Avera, epis, you use your arms. So you're using a Mizbeach, or you're using one of the Kalim of the Mishkan. Not great. Not a great way to use the Mishkan. But it's one level. What happens if a person thinks, has a temptation, and thinks about the Avera? And imagine in their mind they're doing the Avera. What happens then? He brought it into the Kodesh HaKadashim. It's in his lev, it's in his heart, it's in his mind. It's in the Kodesh HaKadashim. So if a person has Hirhuri Avera, that's even worse than the Avera itself on some level. Says the Sfas Emes, if that's true, kal v'chomer for good. If a person thinks and wants and desires and pines to do a mitzvah, where has he brought that temptation into? Where has he brought that machshava into? Where is that hachana taking place? In his heart, in his mind, in the Kodesh HaKadashim. And perhaps that's the deeper explanation of what the Sfas Emes is saying over here. That it's true, a mitzvah you can do with your limbs. A mitzvah, you can put up a sukkah, you can shake the lulav, you can do all those things with your limbs. But what can you actually bring into your heart? Hopefully a mitzvah you could bring in too on some level, because you could have the right kavanas and you could tap into the mitzvah and be inspired by the mitzvah. But hachana, that real temptation and preparation for the mitzvah, always takes place in the heart and the mind. And that's something, as a preparation, is even greater than the mitzvah itself. And you see this yisod all over, not only in Sfas Emes. If you look at Rashi here, this is very relevant to Sukkos as well. Rashi in Sukkah Membeis. Also, Rashi and Tainas on Beis Mabez. Rashi tells us that we know we have a celebration on Sukkot of Simchas Beis HaShoeva. What is Simchas Beis HaShoeva about? What mitzvah? Nisuch HaMayim. Okay. What does Beis HaShoeva refer to? What does Shoeva mean? The drawing. So that makes sense. I mean, you draw the water in order to do Nisuch HaMayim. What's the mitzvah? Nisuch HaMayim, pouring the water out. What do we call it? Simchas Beis HaShoeva. So the whole simcha of this whole mitzvah, this whole party that we're throwing, is for what? The mitzvah? No, it's for the drawing of the water, it's for the preparation. So much so, this is amazing, Rashi and Tainus on Beis Mabez. Manisuch HaMayim Me'orta, the Gemara there is clarifying Rabbi Lezer's opinion about when you start being Masker Geshamim and Masker Mordatal, those types of things. So his opinion is that you already say Lahazker Gruos Geshamim, you already do by night. Why? Because Manisuch HaMayim Me'orta, so too, I think, Af Hazkar and Na'am Me'orta. The same way that Nisuch HaMayim takes place at night, so too, being Masker Geshamim should take place at night. I have a question. Does Nisuch HaMayim take place at night? No, that was, I mean, that was a toss-up. No, it does not. Now, Rashi has one explanation here. He says, no, but if you did it at night, it would be okay, just like other menachos would be okay. Fine, but it doesn't take place at night. So what do you mean, night? So says Rashi, look at this. Yeah, you do find that it's at night. What do you mean it's at night? Because what do we do at night? The Beis HaShoeva. We're Shoeva the Mayim. We draw the Mayim. That's the preparation for the mitzvah. That's not the mitzvah itself. Says the, what the Sfas Emes is telling us, also his grandfather, the Chiddush HaRim, said this about Nisuch HaMayim. You see from these Marmakomos, he didn't have this Rashi in Titus, but he had the Rashi in Sukkah. What you see from these Marmakomos is that, no, the Hachana itself is even greater than the mitzvah. The Hachana, the preparation, is greater than the mitzvah. That's why we call it Simchas Beis HaShoeva, the drawing. That's why, according to Rabbi Lezer, we would start saying Hazkaras Geshamim at night, because the drawing of the water takes place at night. That Hachana is an even greater level of commitment to the mitzvah, of bringing the mitzvah into your heart and into your mind, of being osik in the mitzvah more often even than the mitzvah itself, and of course, of guaranteeing that we have the ability to be osik in the hachana, and Rachman al-Tzlan, not, you know, missing that opportunity, like the Sfas Emes told us, like the Chovas Lulavas told us, is possible by the mitzvah itself. So the hachana, the preparation, is so important. We're holding in days, 4 days leading up to Sukkot. These are the days that the Torah tells us we can't possibly do averos. Why? We can't do averos because we're too busy with mitzvos, but not with the mitzvah themselves. We're busy with the preparation. And on that level, it's even greater than Sukkot itself. But hopefully, b'siat d'shmaya, if we focus on that message, then we can take the time over these couple of days to focus on preparing for the mitzvah so well that even the mitzvah will take us to higher levels, even the mitzvah will inspire us, even the mitzvah will come into our Kodesh Kodashim, and b'siat d'shmaya, we should be blessed with a simchadik and mitzvadik Sukkot. Haba aleinu tova.